Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and with me today is Tommy Morris, Acting Director for the Office of Force Health Protection and Readiness Programs. Also joining us in our conversation from IBM is Terry Ergens. Tommy, we've talked about what you hope to accomplish through the enterprise architecture. So how do you go about building this architecture? And what are the primary challenges and difficulties, and how do you plan to address them?
Sure. Some of our problems are, when we started and why we're doing this enterprise architecture initiative is we started out, we have 62 micro-architectures, if you would, within the military healthcare system, many of which don't talk together or are not completely interoperable. So that's the kind of the crux to the problem. So what we did is we wanted to adopt industry best practices and how industry deals with those kind of problems. So what I did is we partnered with industry and established what I'll refer to as the Red Team. And the Red Team consists of industry partners, and we created an industry forum in which to share information. And then the other piece is we have a government component to it, which includes the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, the combatant commanders for us, and other government agencies, if you would, as well as government functionals. And government functionals are healthcare providers, nurses, and folks like that that would actually use the systems. They're what it's all about. If the system's user-friendly and they can use it, that's what we want. We need to take the complexity out of it for them. Because those were some of the issues that were stated with Alta. It's really difficult to use. The user interface isn't very good. So again, doing this enterprise architecture, basically what I did is a holistic look at all of our policies that are in place, the network operations, how things interoperate, all the interfaces between all of our systems. And through that process, what I did is I codified all of that into different broad areas where I think that is most important to support for an enterprise architecture, and that is we needed to have a unified data schema on how our systems work together. We needed to have an enterprise service bus in which all the business rules are applied to allow all of our systems to be interoperable, like USB for the network again. And then we were building it to be open architecture, open standard. And being one person in a small and having a small team of people, you might ask how we were able to do this. Well, the partnership with the industry is critical to what we've done. In this case, we're acting as the lead integrators. Historically, our defense industry partners were the lead integrators. You know, I'd say we didn't develop Alta. Our vendors developed Alta and provided it to us. And so we wanted to make a change on how we were doing things in order to affect the outcome. And I'll just give you some examples. You know, we have Alta, we've been working on it for a decade, and we still haven't gotten it right for our providers. And you go, well, how can that happen, you know, with the investments that we have? Well, part of it is that our functional communities, the healthcare providers, weren't necessarily involved in the process of doing the development. So when it was delivered, it didn't necessarily meet their needs. So some of the things that we wanted to do is change our acquisition process based on industry best practices. So again, I partnered with industry. We talked through best practices on how do you develop things, how do you architect things. And a number of the companies that we partnered with had already went through a renaissance of just revamping their enterprise architecture, where they just re-architected their entire enterprise to the service-oriented architecture, which allowed them to streamline for profit. Well, in the military, we didn't take that approach originally, but we are for this initiative, and it's actually showed great success to date, where we started to look at it, but we're not streamlining for profit. We're streamlining our enterprise architecture to deliver quality products and service to our healthcare providers that support our warriors.
So, Tommy, it strikes me that one of the key dimensions here is governance. So when the system is complete, who will be the keeper of the system and its data?
The data owners for it, obviously, is going to be the Department of Defense and the keeper of the system, because there are components of it that should be government-owned. So as the lead integrator, we're going to maintain the system, and then we're going to be able to leverage our industry partners to be able to develop things. And the way we've structured our system with this USB, if you would, for our infrastructure, it would allow our industry partners to build widgets, if you would, that could plug in readily. So it makes our system much more flexible. Because to date, we have more than 15,000 unmet requirements because most of our investment had been in maintaining the legacy systems. So this approach allows us to free those funds up. But additionally, as part of the governance, we wanted to do what's called, what I'm terming, continuous vendor monitoring. Because we want to establish a trusted vendor pool to be able to deliver quality products and service to us. And this is much the same principle that industry partners use when they partner together. So before one corporation partners with another, they'll do research on the company and see if they deliver quality products and service and, you know, how well those worked. Well, we're applying the same thing in our acquisition rules and our governance, and that is we want to do that continuous vendor monitoring. Historically, what we do is we look at contracts, is we look, did they deliver on time, on schedule, on budget? And those aren't necessarily indicators of whether they delivered a quality product or service. So we added a couple different indicators on it, and that is, did they deliver a quality product that worked, and did it meet the user's needs? When you apply those measures as part of this, you can see that we wouldn't end up with an ALTA interface that our functionals wouldn't like because they're actually part of the process. So this will keep that from happening again and allow us to deliver real things.
So we talked earlier about the evolving nature of technology. So with respect to this, who's going to be responsible for things like future upgrades? Is there a policy that's in place to support this?
This is a new way of doing business for the military healthcare system. So we're in the process, and the foundation of the enterprise architecture and the things that we're doing is we're building new policies to be able to support these approaches, to be able to support the industry best practices. So certainly we can contract out components of this, but what we're doing is we're actually building an ability to verify and validate things. Like, for example, from the 70s to 80s, 80s to 90s and 90s up, if you look through the GAO reports and stuff like that, you can see we're at, in the 70s, we're at, across the entire Department of Defense, about a $30 billion cost overrun. And the 80s to 90s, we're at a $39 billion cost overrun. And then in the 90s and up, we're at more than a $40 billion cost overrun. You might ask how that was able to happen, considering during those times, the 70s, they introduced the acquisition rules for us. The 80s, we introduced the acquisition rules in the DoD 5000. In the 90s and up, we introduced Clinger-Cohen, modified the original acquisition rules in the DoD 5000, which was supposed to drive costs down. Well, part of the problem was we were also mandated to outsource. We were outsourcing our engineering expertise, which, in fact, if you look, it didn't drive the cost down. It drove the cost up because we became so reliant on the defense industry as our engineering support that they went off in a different direction. And, you know, that's what helped to drive the cost up. So what we're doing right now, we're in the process of building a core engineering component so we can verify and validate things. And not to blame any one person or company, that was just the nature of how things were. And so as part of this, we needed to change that ecosystem, right, and put the government back in charge of what it should be in charge of, and then being able to partner with industry to support us so we can now define to them what we need to support us rather than them defining to us what we need.
Tommy, you mentioned how previous efforts to improve electronic record access have not been successful, often as a result of poor product delivery. And you mentioned this previously. Would you elaborate more on how you are now monitoring vendors to ensure the delivery of quality product that meets your needs?
Absolutely, because it's so critical for delivery. And again, right now, vendors, when they partner with each other, they use the ITIL standards. And again, they measured how long they deliver quality products and service. And us implementing the practice of continuous vendor monitoring is just one piece of that. We also wanted to continuously monitor the products that they deliver. We wanted to engage our user, our functional community, our healthcare providers in the process of doing this because really that's who this affects. They need to be able to use the systems. And so some of the other things that we implemented is what we call incremental code review. So as they're as we pay vendors to develop products for us or we buy products, is we have them deliver incrementally so we can look at and actually, if you would, bring them back into the glide path. So when they deliver the product at the end, it meets the user's needs or the functional's needs. which is extremely important. So we can give those course corrections early on, which saves the government a significant amount of money. But moreover, it gives our healthcare providers relevant technologies that meet their needs.
Great. Switching gears, a recent news article featuring several complaints about the new Theater Medical Data Store, which I understand is a system that tracks wounded soldier evacuated to hospitals outside the war zone. The complaint is that the data store doesn't work. Would you tell us more about this system, and could you address these concerns?
Yeah, I think what happens is there's a lot of disinformation that goes around about the various systems. You know, I like to take the approach of having quantifiable, measurable information. Mm-hmm. Now, with the Theater Medical Data Store, I can tell you over the past 3 years, for example, I mean, our total downtime was probably upward of, if I had to total it up, probably 3 days out of 3 years. One of those times is when the power company shut the power off to the whole grid, so we didn't really have an option even with backup because all the communications were down anyways, even with the backup running. And the system hasn't been down. What had happened was the system was up and it functions extremely well, and it's a web-based system, so when they entered the information, it's real time. And it's real time available again through to the VA. I mean, it's that. So once they enter the information, it's there. What happened was the healthcare providers that were on an earlier rotation had given the guidance on how they wanted the system to act, perform, look, feel, and it met their needs perfectly. When we rotated in the new group of folks, they wanted to see it in a different way, so it didn't meet their needs at the time. But it's a small group of folks that affected. Because the rest of the folks around the world already had accounts and were using the systems. So really it's a matter of education on the system and then being responsive to their needs. And actually in that particular case, we were able to be extremely responsive. And based on these new engineering principles in web services, we're able to turn around fixes very rapidly to not necessarily fixes, but customizations for that particular community.
So, Tommy, as you know, technology prompts change not only to processes but also to behavior. Could you elaborate on whether you feel the behavioral aspects of change are being addressed along with those of the new technologies being implemented?
Yeah, one of the biggest issues, I think, in doing research and development that I've found is you'll always have people that are technophobes. They don't like technologies. They don't like cell phones. They don't like anything. And when they have to use them, they complain. I found in my many years of doing research and development in technologies that that's the case, and it's pretty consistent. I talk about a computer to my mother, for example. She never wanted to touch a computer. Mm-hmm. But when you talk about the new generation, I mean, you have the younger generation of healthcare providers that it's second nature for them. I mean, you see them texting, using mobile devices, using computers, setting up their own sites and stuff like that. And then our children are even far more advanced than that. For example, my daughter, you know, 22,000 text messages in a month. You know, imagine that. So as you introduce new technologies to people, it's critical, one, to involve them in the process of doing the development of technologies or insertion. But it's more critical to make sure that there's training available for folks that don't normally use those type of technologies. Or when you introduce a change, it's absolutely critical to make sure they're informed of the changes that are coming and that they have the training to be able to use the technologies appropriately.
So I would imagine that this is not an easy task here. So can you afford us any specifics on how you manage this change management issue with folks to get them to adopt new technologies?
Sure. I think the best approach with any new technologies that are developed is transparency and keeping people informed of change that's coming so they can expect that they can anticipate things are going to happen. And transparency goes all the way from the users that are going to take care of your input information, if you would, or have direct access to the systems, all the way up to all the leadership. It is absolutely critical that everybody within that continuum is completely informed. Like for this enterprise architecture initiative, I mean, we engage the engineering community up front, we engage industry up front and begin to get the message out as to what we want to accomplish out of this and the end results. We engage the user communities, we engaged all of our leadership so that people are aware of what we're doing, that it's coming, and it's a new way of doing things. Historically, we're not that way for whatever reason. So it's really important to market the technologies, market the capabilities that are coming, because it also drives a synergy. Because if people know what's coming, they can also provide input to that, because you have really a lot of innovators that are healthcare providers that provide input. We have innovators that are throughout all of our services that like to develop things and are have a significant interest. And those are the really driving force behind change within organizations, and people look up to them. So if you engage those type of people in this process and are very transparent about what's going on, that's critical to change.
That's great. What is the future of DoD's Force Health Protection Programs? We will ask Tommy Morris, Acting Director for the Office of Force Health Protection and Readiness Programs, to share with us when we return on the Business of Government Hour.